Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and we chat to rock and metal bands from around the world. How are you doing? How are you living? I hope you're doing well wherever you are listening or watching the podcast. We appreciate you for checking out the show. My guest this time around, or should I say guests this time around, is the excellent Kane and Joe of the band Assurance. This is a really, really fun conversation. This actually is the first conversation of what I'm liking to call season four of the Nevermind Polly podcast. The reason I'm calling it season four is because I've had a bit of a rebrand, I've had a bit of a replay with the questions, with the kind of tone of the show, and also I've got a brand new microphone. Also, I've got a brand new camera, so if you're not watching this on YouTube or on Spotify, what are you doing? Because I spent an absolute shit ton of money on a brand new camera, so I can make this as crisp quality as possible. Yeah, this was absolutely wicked, wicked fun. Massive shout out to Dan, who sorted this one out, who looks after these guys. This was absolutely fantastic. They have a brand new record, EP out. It is called From Ruin Volume 2. They are out on tour currently. Go and check them out. This is fantastic. This is Joe and Kane of the band Assurance on the Nevermind Polly podcast. Let's get to it. Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and we chat to rock and metal bands from around the world. And today I'm sat down with a band who I got sent the press release for a couple of weeks back. And to say that I have fully deep dived in on this band over the last few days is nothing short of an understatement. I am talking to the excellent Assurance. How are we doing, gents? I've got Kane and I've got Joe here. That's two-thirds of Assurance. How are we, gents? How's things?
Mate, what a warm welcome. Yeah, doing great. Doing great.
Yeah, awesome. Doing great. This is amazing. Really warm welcome. Thank you very much, Matt.
No, absolutely fine. The one thing that I love doing with this podcast, right, is because I'm in a very fortunate position to be sent a lot of music, get to chat to a lot of bands and things, but I don't talk to bands in 2024 at least that I'm not actively into, because it's disingenuous for me to be like, I really love this band, and then they're like, yeah, cool, and then like I never listen to them. So when I have a band on, if I get offered them, I'm like, yeah, I'm in, I'm locked in. So we are here to chat about a brand new EP from you guys called Ruin Volume 2, which is out on the 12th of April. We're having this conversation at the start of April, should I say. How are you feeling ahead of the race? What's the mood like in camp? How are you both feeling about it?
So we're super excited about it. It's almost like a sense of relief in a way, because we dropped From Ruin Volume 1 last April. So it's basically a year coming full circle with it. And it's been a lot of pressure in the camp for sure, because obviously we're wrapping up rehearsals. We've been sorting out all of our merch ready for the tour to promote the EP and stuff. And obviously we've got a new song that we just dropped last month as well. So just firing on all cylinders at the moment. There's a lot of pressure, but we're all really enjoying it. We're all feeling super motivated, ready for release.
Absolutely love that. Anything to add, Kane?
I tell you what, Joe actually hit the nail on the head there. Yeah, I mean, again, as Joe says, it's very tense. There's a lot of pressure in the camp at the minute, but regardless, we're having a lot of fun. At the same time, we're highly motivated and we can't wait to show you what else we have in store in the future.
Absolutely. And you know what? I've just had, so sometimes when I do this podcast, I have intrusive thoughts in my brain of like, I just had an intrusive thought that I sounded like a football pundit for just a split second of just being like, so how do you think you played the match, gents? Did you play well? Oh, it's a game of two halves. For some reason, when we were talking, my brain just sort of went, anyway, doesn't matter. I'm going on a tangent.
Mate, that's me. Whenever we finish playing, whenever we come off stage, I'm like, right, guys, how do we do? How do you think that went? It's always like that.
Maybe, I don't know if you guys are football fans, but currently my dad's team, who I sort of support because he supports them, Ipswich Town, are currently champion, the top of the championship. And football's on my brain after yesterday. So there we go.
Yeah, they played Southampton yesterday, didn't they?
They did. And they are going to hopefully go up into the Premier League. Finally. again, I'm not massive on my football, but my dad is. So there we go. Let's go back to the music. I want to take it right back to the very beginning for you both, because I love to know where bands kind of started out in terms of their musical journey, because some people on the internet will have you believe their first ever band they listened to when they were 5 years old was Cannibal Corpse. Now, I've not found that person who actually gives me that answer. So I want to know is, what was it like growing up in your house? Was there music? Was there kind of parents players? How did you kind of come into being into heavy metal musicians?
I tell you what, for example, growing up in my household, it was weird. I mean, we didn't listen to any metal of this generation whatsoever. It was more or less listen to stuff by, you know, Little Richard, Buddy Holly, the Rolling Stones, and then that was from a grandparent's side. But then from my actual parents' side, specifically my dad, it was more or less Ozzy Osbourne, Black Sabbath, Motley Crue, Iron Maiden, Wasp, which Wasp do not get enough of a mention.
Absolutely.
those guys are such, they are the underdog of metal, especially in the 80s, and they deserve a lot more credit than what is due. But when it came to, you know, specifics like deathcore and metalcore, that was, yeah, that kind of paved the journey for me, but I got myself into that. I think where that emanated from was, yeah, when I was a kid listening to, dare I say his name, Marilyn Manson. Yeah, my grandparents did not like it when I started listening to Marilyn Manson. I can tell you that for free, because obviously they had known about the name and the person and his stage antics. When I started listening to him, it was a whole different ballgame. I'm like, no, you're not going to. That's the first time, actually. That's a core memory coming back when my grandparents said, you are not going to be listening to him. So then I did carry on listening to him, but then I started moving on to listening to stuff like Green Day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, like, I went down the pop punk route before ever getting into metalcore or deathcore, and that just paved the way, and here we are now.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's important to recognize you know, where people do come from, because it doesn't matter how you got to where you are now. It's these things all have their purpose, and they all have their roots. You know, I grew up listening, my first kind of three influential bands were Green Day, Enter Shikari, Bullet for My Valentine, and then kind of fall off the trajectory, you know, down the rabbit hole as you do. Joe, how did it all start for you, my friend?
So I don't know much about my grandmother and great grandmother, but apparently they were both pianists. Amazing. And that fed down to my dad, who ended up learning bass in like his 40s or something like that. He was quite inspired by some of his mates who were in bands. But my dad's always been really, really into things like hi-fi systems and turntables. Mm-hmm. And really got into them in the 80s when he started listening to Thin Lizzy a lot. He was a massive fan of Gary Moore. He managed to meet Phil Lynott before he passed away.
Amazing.
And from there, that love of like alternative music, not necessarily heavy music, but alternative music has gone down to me and my brothers. So one of my brothers introduced me literally to the bands you mentioned, like Enter Shikari, Bullet for My Valentine. Others were like Avenged Sevenfold, Senses Fail, No Effects, Yellow Card. Got me into just a bunch of alternative bands, and was about 8 or 9, showed me like Sony Walkman CDs and all that sort of thing. Whereas my other brother was more into blues and rock, so he played a lot of like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, John Mayer on his guitar, which led to me also wanting to learn guitar when I was about 9 or 10 years old. So got my first guitar, honestly hated it at first, did not know what I was doing, my fingers were blistering, I just didn't have that sort of that gene, that knack for it. Mm-hmm. So I ended up reading guitar magazines and finding Periphery.
Yeah.
In a guitar magazine, just with a random demo disc in it, and literally just completely fell in love with angry heavy music from there.
I wanted to, the next question on my thing is, so again, this kind of this part of the interview is trying to get to know the people behind the music, right? So I want to know, it's a loaded question, and I apologize for it being a loaded question. Who in 2024, off the top of your dome, right here, right now, is the best band you've ever seen live?
Oh God, that is a loaded shotgun of a question. Oh, the best. And you know what? I can answer that straight off. Can they never turn around and say we are the biggest or the best band in the world. But I'll give you a clue. They always come out and say we are the hottest band in the world, and then they say the name before coming out. They've
I'm
been
the
going
hottest
since
band.
1973, and before they were called their name, they went by the name Wicked Lester.
See, I've never seen the band Kiss, but it seems like a Kiss kind of thing.
Yeah,
Is it Kiss? Oh,
you got that straight on the
amazing.
mark. That was Kiss.
Oh, amazing. Lovely job. When was
No.
first time you saw Kiss?
The first time I actually ever saw Kiss, I can tell you the exact date and where it was. It was May the 5th, 2011, on the Sonic Boom Tour, and I saw them at the LG Arena in Birmingham when it was called the LG Arena. And I was on how the arena's mapped out. I was on, if you're looking at the stage, I was in the seated areas with my dad and his friend, Brucey. I was at the top right, in the middle of the top right.
Oh, amazing. I mean, so the LG Arena, is that the that's now the Resorts Arena? Because
Yeah.
I've only been to Birmingham once, and I saw Stone Sour and the Pretty Reckless there 2017, I want to say. But yeah, that's the only that's yeah, amazing. Kiss, love that. Joe, you're back in the room, you're back on the podcast. Welcome
I'm
back.
back. I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure how much of my answer you ended up catching.
No,
But
it's all
I
good.
literally looked back at the screen and everything had frozen. So I've reset everything. Hopefully we'll be okay.
It's all good. It's all good. Zoom can be absolute dog shit sometimes. I don't want to speak too badly of Zoom just because
They're
eardrop and then just cut the whole conversation.
listening to us.
Absolutely. I was just throwing to Kane there and just ask a loaded question, which I'll say the same thing to you. Again, it is a loaded question, so I apologize. But in 2024, who is the best band you've ever seen live, Joe?
Best band I've ever seen live is Sleep Token, in terms
Ah,
of
straight off the bat.
atmosphere,
Love that.
how ridiculously tight they are, the theatrics, even stuff like when I saw them at OVO at Wembley, just the light show is just absolutely ridiculous. If I had to pick a second band though, probably Dayseeker. I saw Dayseeker
Okay,
live
amazing.
for the first time May last year, so nearly a year ago now. Bloody hell. Christ, that's already been a year. Saw them with Akers, who are friends of ours actually,
Yeah.
and yeah,
Already been
they
a
were absolutely
year.
incredible. Their singer Rory is unbelievably good. They were amazing live.
You know what? I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too much because, you know, COVID and all the rest of it. But the fact that we had a worldwide pandemic, we've all lost about 3 years of our life. It's just so weird that you say it's been a year. Like our perception of time is so like warped as a human race nowadays. You think, oh, you'll see someone in the street you've not seen in a while. Like, oh, when was last to see you? 5 years ago. I'm like, what do you mean it was 5 years ago? Like, what are you talking about? It's the most mental thing ever. Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not on the Sleep Token train, and I really, really want to because I don't like hating things, and I don't hate them at all. I don't get it. But then I don't know whether it's just not for me. I don't know, but maybe because I didn't, well, I say get, I didn't understand the whole hype behind Bad Omens, right? Again, not really for me on record, but saw them with Bring Me the Horizon. I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. I get it. Like, it took me till I got in the room and watched them. I was like, oh, I get it. So maybe going and go and see Sleep Token might turn me on to them. Then maybe we shall see in the future. But love that. So I wanted to talk about obviously the new EP, which is From Ruin Volume 2. So I wanted to kind of ask, you spoke about at the beginning of the interview about this as being volume number 2 versus volume 1, which came out April of last year. Wanted to kind of ask, what was the thinking behind making volume 1 versus and then volume 2? Is it like a cataloging thing? Is it like an extension on volume 1? Is it something different? What is the kind of thinking behind that?
So we wrote everything all as one sort of concept album.
For sure. I wasn't
But
sure if that was the yeah, amazing. Love that.
yeah, so with the we had this vision, like back in the early days of like having two CDs and you put them together and it makes one complete image.
Amazing.
Which is all carried through to volume one and two. But it's basically, it's meant to be an overarching narrative of transitions in life. So going from one headspace to another, going from one physical place to another, you know, it's about the human condition. It's about all the things that we go through, all the big questions. And so, yeah, it was all one big project, but we decided to split it into two for a few reasons, honestly. The first half being the darker half of the journey, you know, that has the bulk of the heavier, darker songs in it, which is reflected in the production and stuff as well. Whereas volume two is a lot more hopeful. It's a lot more anthemic. It's got some brighter songs in it, some more optimistic songs. It's also got a lot more clean vocals as well. So we decided to split it up and have the more clean orientated songs on the second half, just to give us as much time as possible in the studio, just to get everything like absolutely perfect. And yeah, that's just how it came to be. And I suppose as well, it worked quite well, but just with regrettably the way it's kind of going at the moment, everyone's attention span is just getting lower and lower. We're all digesting smaller and smaller forms of content. Barely anyone just sits down and listens to full albums nowadays, which is a massive shame. Mm. But we're just kind of in an industry and in a culture of listening to singles and just listening to like 30 seconds of the single as well. So we still wanted to release a record, and obviously the EP was just kind of the second best way of doing that.
I love that. And I think you're 100% bang on the money when you talk about the fact that the industry and the people, you know, they're kind of pushing for this kind of short term, short burst, short this, short that. And for me personally, I think the best art is expansive. And yeah. I think if you can get lost in a world, that is the most kind of brilliant thing. And I think it's really, really good and really like, cool, I guess, already is probably the right word, but you are so honest about it, because it you know, it could be, you could sit here and go, yes, we're making this EP and like, you know, we want to just do this and this. It's like, no, actually we want to do it as this long form thing. But the easiest way just to do that, to get it to the most amount of people, is to make it in two halves. But kind of like I said, the first volume I do think is really, really strong. So I'm really, really excited to hear volume two being a little bit more of the lighter end of what you guys can do, and the kind of, I think it's really exciting when a band kind of bursts onto the scene or bursts into the room with an EP or an album and goes, bang, here we are. And all the kind of little like shatter bits that come off that is where you then push your sound. And this is going to sound like kind of a backwards compliment. It's not meant to be. I'm really excited to see what the next thing is. Because if volume one is kind of where you start, volume two is the extension on volume one. Where do you go when those tiny little ideas that have sprouted from that, where do they go? Where do you find the edge of your sound? Does that make any kind of sense?
probably won't be like volume three, but yeah, we're literally meeting up as early as we can this Saturday to just start writing more stuff.
Amazing.
Like, we will just never stop. You know, we've got, you know, someone new who's joined the team who we can't say too much about yet, but they've really been pushing on the songwriting front as well. And I think whatever we release after volume two, whenever it is, it's going to sound different, but it's also going to be refined. It's going to have all of that same DNA in it. I'm just so excited for the future. Like, as much as I'm excited about this EP and I want to focus on this EP, the future's like really, really exciting as well. I think we're in a good place.
I think that's the important thing as well, because I count myself, I'm not in a band, but I do a podcast in the sense of I'll have this conversation now, this will go out in maybe 2 weeks, but sometimes I'll have a conversation and it won't go out for 3 months. So it's like, I'll do all the artwork, blah, 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 post on the internet, and then people go, oh my God, that was great. And I'm like, oh, I kind of forgot that that happened. I'm on to like three or four things down the road. And I completely understand how that is for a band as well. You're in the studio, you write it, and you're like, this is the best shit we've ever done. Cool, now let's go top that. And whilst you're topping that, your EP comes out, your album comes out, and you go, oh yeah, that was cool, we did that. Like, although you're like immeasurably proud of it, it's kind of like, oh, we're onto this other stuff that's also just as good, if not better, as what we've just done before.
No, for sure. It's really weird as well when we're talking about like, you your perception of time changes, especially as I'm finding as I'm sort of, you know, getting older as well. I feel like every year is faster than the year before that. And the single Amelia that we just released, we wrote that like 2 years ago. Kane came up with a story for it more like 3 years ago.
Sure. Yeah,
and it's just so weird thinking like that's the current thing, but that's like old to us almost.
Yeah, it's really weird because Amelia, our latest single, yeah, that was three years ago. Before it, I remember it was exactly a week, Joe, before you came up with a concept for our debut EP, The Beginning of the End. And I remember it took an hour to write the whole script and basic screenwrite of it. Basically, I imagined the song as like a film or a short film at first with script, characterization, everything, and then just sent it over. And I remember it took an hour, and I remember sending you over, and you said, how long has it taken you to do this? And you went, I went, about an hour, and you went, how the fuck did you do that in an hour?
Yeah.
And
then, yeah, literally.
Yeah, oh no, sorry, it wasn't a dead week afterwards. It was the next day you came up with a concept. I was like,
creativity, just, you know, they just come up at the strangest times. And you always wish you can go back and grab a little bit of that. It's like a lightning in a bottle almost with each record. Really, it just kind of represents like a different point in time. But I'm looking forward to like in 10 years time looking back at all of this and just being like, look at all these, you know, these EPs and things.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's something that I'm learning as well. So as long as doing the podcast, before I did the podcast, I'd done like YouTube and things like that. Mm. And I'm now kind of getting back into that. And it's kind of like, if I learned very, like from a very, very good friend of mine who's quite big in the space. He said to me, like, if you have an idea, like work from that and then go the other way. So like for YouTube, like if you've got the title, work from that. As if you've got like a riff, work from that. And it's kind of like, it is just so... like, it's fucking content is fun, man. Making shit is so fucking fun. I love it. So I wanted to kind of talk about the fact you are going on tour as well. So as this podcast goes out, this podcast will go out the week of the EP release, which coincidentally means you're going on tour as well, hitting Liverpool, Rugby, Birmingham and London. Are there any particular songs that you're particularly hyped to play live? It can be off the old stuff, it can be a new stuff, anything you find, you know, you've written it and you've gone, fucking hell, this is a bit, you know, a techie on the old fingers for Joe, or you're thinking about the vocal and going, fucking hell, I've really got to do that. Like,
there's a song on From Room Volume 2 called Shadow Self, which was the last song that we ended up finishing for the record. And it's my favorite Assurance song. And it's kind of like, almost kind of like saving the best till last sort of thing. And the first time we played it in rehearsals, it was like, pretty much note perfect, like the first time we ever played it, and it was just everyone's faces in the studio was just like, this is fucking unreal, this is so fun. This is exactly why we like playing music, and I just really hope it translates well on the tour. You obviously don't want to spoil the entire set list, but obviously, like, you know, song from the brand new EP, we're probably going to be playing it. But mate, yeah, Shadow Self, definitely one to look out for when we're playing live. I'm so excited for that one.
I love that. You know what? It reaps the reward of playing a full album, a full EP, is if you put a little nugget of fucking brilliance right at the end, just for the people who have listened to it as a whole cohesive thing, and you go, fucking, let's go. Love that.
It definitely, Shadow Self was definitely... Now, this is obviously no one's heard Shadow Self yet live or even on record, so this is just to top the surprise for everyone. It's... if I could explain it live, it's definitely the ace that we're keeping in the deck.
Amazing.
But for record sake, like listen to it on Spotify, it's like a bullet to the face. Like it's just there. It's just bang goes in, and it's definitely one of the heaviest tracks that we've ever done, instrumentally. Like. And we again, as Joe said, we had so much fun playing it, and I don't think we ever, we didn't miss a beat at all in rehearsal first time round just doing it. It's just such a very fun track to play with.
I love that.
I don't mind saying this because the podcast will be out when the EP's is out, but the single 2223 that released in January, it has this little interlude at the end with a piano melody. And that song flows into Shadow Self, and that piano melody is the core melody for Shadow Self. And it's almost two songs that interconnect. You've got a light song and like a dark song, and they go together. So I can't wait for the penny to drop and just see on people's faces. They're like, oh, okay, that's what that is.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So speaking about the fact you're going on tour, I'd like to know, gentlemen, what is something you cannot live without whilst on tour? So if I tell you, you're going on tour tomorrow, what's the one thing you're double checking you've packed?
Oh, man.
And you can't say your passport because everyone says the passport and it's an easy cop out.
Yeah. Oh, man. Kane.
Peanut butter sandwich. That's not me being serious.
It's all good. You can have peanut butter sandwich. It's all good.
I don't know if this is a cop out answer, but I'm going to be taking a person called Ed.
Nice. Okay, dude, cool.
Ed is our merch guy. He drives absolutely everywhere, and he's an absolute fucking beast. He is literally as much of this band as we are.
Yeah, for sure.
But
he's a
every single
cool
music video rehearsal, the lot, he's always been there. He's our best mate.
Yeah,
and yeah, if you're ever at a show, you'll see Ed. He's at the merch table looking after us. I'm bringing Ed. That's gonna be my answer to that one. Sorry if that's a cop out.
No, not at all.
That's not even a cop out. That's actually the best answer you could have given, because it was like, as soon as you said Ed, I was there like, bastard, look, that is such a good
You were like, oh, you fucking shown up my peanut butter sandwich. You've made my answer.
Yeah, he's like, oh, how have you trumped this? Oh, man. I'm trying to think what I actually do bring on tour with me every time we do tour.
Your microphone, hopefully.
Nah, we don't need that. We don't need to listen to it at all. Oh my god. You know what? I'm actually, this is a very out of pocket one and a very weird one at least. And it's a continuous thing I do bring on tour. It's my girlfriend, my partner, Alicia, she bought me last year for my birthday. It's, if anyone's a Star Wars fan here, you know the symbol for the Mandalorians, the Mythosol?
Yeah. I'm a big Star Wars fan. I'm in. I'm like, if I was on the edge, in fact, hang on. I'm now officially on the edge of my seat. And I'm sorry, it's too loud for everyone at home. But yeah, go on.
it's the Mythosol head pendant on a necklace. And I don't wear it on stage all the time, but it's a weird thing. I always bring it with me as a bit of like a good look thing, mm-hmm. as if it were. Mm-hmm. But it's more or less like a habit. And yeah, I remember the first time she handed me that. We were just watching TV just in bed, and then she said, "Close your eyes," and gave me it, and I was nearly in tears. It was such a good present. And that necklace has been in photo shoots. It's been, I don't think it's been in any music videos yet, but it's been on tour. It's been on gigs that we've played. It's just one of those things I tend to bring with me.
I love that. You know what? That you've definitely matched Ed as an answer to that question. I love that.
I don't think I have.
Well, you've at least redeemed yourself for the peanut butter sandwich, mate. That one was a cop out. So. Good job.
I've got a few closing questions for you. And you guys are essentially the guinea pigs. Again, I don't have, like, the podcast isn't split into like seasons or anything like that. But this is kind of season four, quote unquote, because I've kind of revamped the questions. I've kind of like changed it up a little bit. So I have essentially stolen the idea from another podcast, and essentially it's the Wonder Box question. Right now I want you to imagine a place called Nevermind Poly Podcast Vault, right? And what I want you to know, what I want to ask you, is what you would like to add to the vault to be immortalized forever. It can be a place, a person, a feeling, emotion. It can be something that you just want to. So if you, I don't know if you guys are both British, right? So you might understand the concept. Room 101, right? You put something in that you fucking hate. Mm-hmm. It's the opposite. It's just something you want to read, like, immortalized forever.
That's quite a hard question, guys.
I should have saved Ed for this question, really.
You've told me age too soon, bro.
I told you my guinea pigs. I've now got to switch those questions around and move them a little bit further apart. But no, that's all good. Man.
That is a very challenging question. It can only be one thing, but it can be literally anything.
Yeah, exactly. Like I say, it can be a person, a place, a feeling, emotion. It can be something, you know, mundane. It doesn't have to be very sentimental or anything like that. It can just be something that you just want to have immortalized in a vault. If the world ends tomorrow, this thing will be safe or protected.
Ooh, okay. Can I have one Lord of the Rings extended edition box set? Yep. I can have a yes for that. Extended edition box set, please. I'll have one of those.
Love that. Love that. Yes, absolutely.
God, this is so hard.
You can still have the peanut butter sandwich if you want.
I was thinking, you know what, I might backtrack here and actually pick that, but you know what, it's gonna have to be Lego. We can't run this world without Lego.
9,000 piece Lego Millennium Falcon. That's what we're having, mate.
Yeah, mate. I tell you what, specifically Lego Death Star.
Yes. Absolutely.
Put that in the vault. That's getting immortalized. Yeah.
Occupied for a couple of hours.
So this is a way to make someone feel really fucking dumb, right? So my sister for Christmas this year got me Lego. She got me like the Harry Potter Dobby you can get, right? And he's like reading the book, whatever. Anyway, it's meant for 9+ year olds. It took me, I'm not even joking, all of fucking Boxing Day to put that fucking thing together. Right. And I know my eyesight is pretty fucking shocking. I've got my iPad up, right? And I've got the fucking instruction manual going, so this bit goes on. And Rebecca, my wife to be, is like, Matt, this is meant for like 9, 10 year olds. You're struggling with this. And I'm like, I don't care. But you know what? Most proud I've ever been once I finished it. So yeah, Lego's definitely going in there. Yes, absolutely.
Good show.
If I wasn't going to choose Lego, because I saw your shirt, Matt, it would be Doctor Who Doomsday episode.
Oh, mate. But you know the best thing about this shirt? It's got cats on it.
Oh, my Lord. That's amazing.
I know. And I don't know. My cat's currently over there. He's not getting a mention on this podcast anymore. He always gets mentioned on the podcast. Anyway, so I have got two, again, you're my guinea pig. So I'm going to do the final question, which I normally ask every single guest. And I have asked every single guest since this podcast inception in 2020. And it's a simple one, sort of. What is the best thing about being in a band for you both, gentlemen?
Ooh, the best thing about being in a band. The single best thing about being in a band.
Or the thing that you find the most enjoyable.
It's almost like anti-catharsis almost, but it's like going through all of the stress and the hard work of, like, you know, sorting out merch, writing songs, rehearsing the songs, booking the shows, you know, running the whole thing, like doing all of the stuff behind the scenes that you have to do being in the band nowadays, and then getting on stage and it's like, it's actually fucking paid off. That's the best thing about it, is that feeling of like, all right, I don't need to fucking worry about it now. I can just go out, smash it. You know, people are enjoying the songs. You know, that's the best thing for me, is overcoming all the stress, which to an extent I do quite enjoy as well. Like, you know, doing the admin sort of thing. And, you know, songwriting and keeping myself to myself. But, you know, when it all fucking, you have that single moment of, you know, playing with a crowd.
I tell you what, I was thinking just the same there, Joe, but I'll build on that, as in a core memory of it when you're finished.
Well, that's pretty much it, really. It's just when you have that little moment, like when we played in Cambridge the weekend, and you got off the stage and walked about 20 feet out into the crowd and just started screaming in people's faces. It's just little things like that where it's like, this is so fucking worth doing. I would not want to do anything else in my life. That overcoming all the stress and having that feeling, that's the best.
I would say I'd love to pinpoint it to a core memory and just build on that. When we played the Flapper, the last time we played, and you had the curtain where no one could see us, and then you had that interlude come on for Facade, and then all you could hear was just the roar of
Yeah,
everyone's
people go
voice just
mental.
chanting assurance. That for me, that is, and that I'm putting my ego in a jar at this point because, tell a lie, I've got an ego. Any member in a band can tell you that that's ever met me, but I'm just not an ass about it. So just put that in a jar for now, and it's just the sheer roar of the crowd just chanting your ultimately your name, your brand, your band. No, like that's how, in my opinion, that's how you know everything's paid off. That what you have done, what you have organized, the stress, heartache, blood, sweat, tears, whatever, that's how you know it's all paid off. And it was that one core memory, that moment, just doing that. And we all went up one by one.
I think that's my second favorite stage walk, though, because our first ever show, Matt, we came on to Jewel of the Fates, but
That was so sick.
we couldn't walk onto the stage. We had to step up about 2 feet to get onto it. It was so like anticlimactic with all this epic music going on, but it was just so funny. Like we couldn't help but just play our hearts out after that because it was just such a stupid moment.
Yeah, but with everyone still absolutely loved it. Like everyone just still gave us a round of applause, and even though people knew where we were stood on the, we were stood in the crowd on the sidelines, just waiting to go up during Samuel Kim's ver epic version of Jewel the Fates, and like we still get a round of applause. It's like, wow, this one hasn't flopped on us. It's actually worked in our favor.
I love that. I love that. Gentlemen, this has been a fucking pleasure. I cannot wait to hear part two, volume two of the EP series, trilogy, however you want to call it. Thank you so much for your time on the podcast today. Is there anything that we need to talk about that we haven't already covered? Obviously, you're out on tour as people listen to this podcast, or you will be then heading out on tour. The EP is out now. Anything you want to mention? The cat's going to get involved while we do this. Hang on.
That's all good. But obviously, if anyone's interested in keeping up with Assurance, we are at Assurance Band UK absolutely everywhere. Assuranceband.com for our website. We need to see everyone who tunes into this. You need to come out to a show. And just before you tune out, Matt, this is Eowyn.
Oh, see,
Just
we've got
confirming
cat
your
cam
signature.
now. Love this.
She's been very well behaved today. My partner's just picked her up.
My cat Blue, well, my partner's cat Blue has not been well behaved. He's constantly crying and wanting attention. Little salt. Love it.
But yeah, honestly, just we really appreciate the love and support so much. We have merch if people want to keep us going. Obviously, tours are a massive challenge. But just shout out to yourself, Matt. Really appreciate the love and the time today, man. So thank you very much.
It's a
Awesome,
pleasure.
Matt. Thank you very much.
Without you guys, without the bands, without your lovely PR Dan who sorted this out, I wouldn't have a podcast doing what I do and having these conversations. So yeah, big up everyone involved who made this happen. Yeah, go out and see Assurance live. As I say, dates are available on the internet. They're going to be fucking huge. Big up. We will see you next time. Peace and love, everybody. We'll see you all soon.
Cool.
Thanking you.
Awesome. Cheers. Take care.